You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. And before we get to our top story today, this just in, that actually two Canadians have been killed in that attack in Burkina Faso. So lots of bad things happening around the world. And now to our top story. The world watched in horror as white supremacists and neo-Nazis descended on Charlottesville, Virginia, to stage what they described as their largest rally in decades to, quote, take America back. They openly chanted racist and anti-Semitic slogans, and one counter-protester, Heather Hayers, was killed when a car driven by James Alex Field plowed into that crowd. In his statement, President Donald Trump was reluctant to call out the alt-right by name, putting the blame on, quote, many sides. That was hailed as a victory by the alt-right. He didn't name them, and Trump has come under fire for that. The White House later condemned the white supremacists, but that didn't come from Trump himself. And so did the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, who said the incident fits the definition of domestic terrorism. Now, there have been many protests around North America since then. So does this represent a re-emergence of this hateful ideology? Or does the backlash against it signal its demise? We'd like to know, as always, what you think. 416-360-0740. Toll free 1-866-740-4740. Right now, we go to Michael Diamond of Upstream Strategy and also filmmaker Martin Himmel. Many of our listeners will be familiar with his work, much of which is broadcast on our sister station, Vision TV. And Martin had a four-part documentary called Jew Bashing, the New Anti-Semitism. He went undercover, and some of the people that he talked to undercover for that documentary featured in this Charlottesville white supremacist protest. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, so Michael, let's start with you. What do you make about everything that has now happened around this?
You know, it's always shocking to watch anything like this unfold. And the president, who was always very quick to criticize the former president and his language around terrorist attacks, certainly has left a lot to be desired in his comments. He's in, you know, a bad situation as always, because he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. You know, he'll be told to tweet about this, but then he's told to not tweet. So he's in a bad situation, but that's all of his own making. And whenever, you know, these situations are nothing short of depressing.
Martin, you were undercover with some of these people. What can you tell us about these so-called alt-right groups?
Well, I can tell you that they've got far more support than most people imagine, because on the internet, their websites, like Vanguard News Network — Vanguard was one of the groups that was at that demonstration — Vanguard News Network is ranked in the top 5% of internet sites and traffic in the world. There's millions of people who follow them very quietly. Unfortunately, Donald Trump directly or indirectly has basically given them a sense of legitimacy by not categorically coming out against them in this demonstration and looking the other way on many other incidents, which will only encourage them to take more demonstrations. But I met the leader of Vanguard News Network, and it took months to get to see him in Kirksville, Missouri, an isolated town. And he told me in very frank terms, straight to the face, that Hitler missed completing his mission in annihilating the Jews and murdering them all, and that they have to finish the job.
Now, one of the things that I find very interesting, and there's a parallel with the radicalization, radical Muslims, and that is that the role of the internet in this. Michael?
Yes.
Or yeah. Martin, whoever. Go ahead.
Michael, you go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the internet is a place where people can make comments that are nameless, and they get emboldened to eventually, you know, move from a comment board to Twitter to showing up at a rally like this to committing a crime. So it's definitely concerning. And yeah, absolutely, the parallel between ISIL recruitment and this is very similar.
Martin, what do you make of that?
Well, listen, ISIS has proven quite that you can motivate people, get them to do horrific acts. The difference between the fellow who rammed a truck in Nice and killed 80 people and this young man who killed one person is basically in the casualties. The technique was the same. So the internet and spewing hate on the internet can motivate a lot of people, especially people who are very troubled, lonely, and looking for causes.
There are a couple of very troubling aspects. Well, there are many very troubling aspects to this, but let's touch first of all on Donald Trump's role in all of this. You know, where's that noise coming from? Okay, hopefully the noise on the lines will die down. So first of all, as you rightly pointed out, that he used to call out Barack Obama for not calling radical Islam by its name, and now he is hesitating to do that with white supremacists. And just today, another very disturbing thing, one of the few black CEOs of a major Fortune 500 company, Merck, was on his manufacturing council, resigned from that council this morning because Trump refused to name the white supremacists. Then Trump gets on Twitter and says, like, really rude, now he'll have more time to deal with drug ripoff prices. Michael, what do you think of that?
Well, and that's just it with Trump. It's the process he takes to get there, because he'll often at the very end of the day say something he should, and it might not be eloquent. You know, it's certainly awkward to talk about a domestic terrorist attack and finish it by saying "so sad," because "so sad" doesn't actually capture how deplorable and devastating this is. Although I should be careful about using deplorable in relation to the president. But if you think back to the campaign when he was asked to disavow David Duke, he eventually did. But it took him like 12 minutes on Meet the Press to say something that any sane person who has any common decency would just say right off the bat. So it's the process that he takes to get to often say the right thing, where by the time he gets there and says what he should have said at the beginning, nobody cares anymore, because why did it take him so long to do something that's so sensible?
Well, some people think he is racist. Some people think he just has no compunction of getting the support of people who are white supremacists.
Well, and that's just it. Is there a huge difference between being racist yourself or allowing yourself to be a vehicle to success for racists to feel emboldened or to court their support through a dog whistle? So is there really a difference there?
Martin?
Yeah, well, there's a much more glaring problem for him here, too, which I don't know if he's really understanding, and that is his closest supporters, like Mike Pence, the vice president, like Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, both who are very, very right-wing conservatives and couldn't be called liberal in any way, have both categorically condemned white supremacists here, and Jeff Sessions said it's an act of terror, domestic terror. You can't get more definitive than that. And the fact that he doesn't step up to the plate makes it all the more glaring. It's almost like there's a Republican Party that's administering, and then there's this White House that's isolated. It's kind of taking a different path, and it's quite glaring when that happens.
Do you think that this has a chance of sort of normalizing these views? I mean, it's kind of shocking to see people actually, you know, willing to say this in public.
Well, may I answer that, or
please?
Is it okay? Yeah. Well, the thing that struck me about these white groups, white supremacist groups, is when I tried to reach them, which was 3 or 4 years ago, is that they were intensely frightened and suspicious and scared to come out in public. They would always come out in the internet and in cyberspace, but to actually meet people and talk to you, it would only be in a public place. Like when I met Alex Linder from Vanguard, it had to be in a place called Truman Park in this tiny town called Kirksville. They're very, very frightened. They're very, very scared. But that's going to change now, because whether Trump meant it or not, and whether he has any, he might be totally against them, but the fact that he didn't take a stand on it and gave him sort of a wink, that will be a tremendous impetus for them to come up with more demonstrations like that, because that fear factor, that deterrent factor, society pointing a finger at them factor is going to dissipate, and they'll be more emboldened now to take more demonstrations.
Michael, would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And it's foolish of the president, because I think he thinks that there's a tremendous part of his base that he would lose if he were to come out against it. But all you have to do is look at the Louisiana senatorial election from last year, where David Duke, who Donald Trump had such a hard time disavowing during the campaign, was a candidate for the United States Senate and came in dead last. So you get a bunch of people to show up at a rally. You have the internet boards. You have you have people on Twitter. They're able to amplify what their influence actually is. But when it comes into the ballot box, which is the thing that a politician should worry about, if for electoral reasons, obviously they should worry about decency for every other reason. But if this is an electoral calculation, it's a silly one, because David Duke in Louisiana came in at the very bottom of that senatorial primary. So there isn't the base of support there that the president seems to think is important to him.
Okay, let's take a couple of calls. We've got Walter in Hamilton. Hi, Walter.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. What I'd like to say here is these horrible incident that took place over the weekend, that could all be avoided, because we have to get some orders and priority here. Number one, any form of hate is not natural. It is taught from generation to generation. It is not something that comes naturally. And secondly, I refer to hate as an antisocial cancer. I wrote a book called Let's End Violence, and has been published. I don't have the money to publish it. But at the same time, in that book, I use cancer as an antisocial metaphor describing what hate does to society. And that we can. That's exactly an example where it comes from. And we have to put laws in place and say, okay, there's a limit here. Yes, there is a freedom of speech and all that sort of stuff and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, it should be treated like a tool. It's like a knife. I can go home and cut my food and prepare my food with a knife. It's legal. But if I was to go out and use it to carve somebody because I hate him or her because of whatever reason, I think basically speeches should be treated the same way. You have the freedom of speech, but the minute you start to defame someone or vile their being or humanity over whatever you hate them for, because as far as I'm concerned, any kind of hate, whether it's racism, homophobia, sexism, and all the other schisms you can possibly think of, are all different species of antisocial cancers.
Okay, Walter,
thanks
for your call. We do have, of course, laws against hate speech here. You know, they're not as strong in the States. They veer more towards free speech over there. Let's go to Nolasco in Hamilton. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for calling, for taking my call, Ms. Nyberg. Okay, you asked earlier, would this incident signal a resurgence or a demise of these fringe groups? Okay, David Cunningham in the American Public Experience has a very good documentary tracing the waves. This is in regard to Ku Klux Klan. So they come in waves. They will resurge. And you mentioned the use of the internet. It will facilitate their resurgence. It will not go away. The U.S. is an open society. It has its Bill of Rights, among others. And there will always be these groups. Now, I agree with the gentleman that said earlier that there should be a way to, you know, to invoke the law when they go beyond the pale of, you know, of freedom of speech. The other thing that I noted is there seems to be a confusion. Some media outlets refer to them as white nationalists. The majority would call them white supremacists. There's a thin line that divides, but still an important distinction. White supremacists, they consider themselves superior. white nationalists, they are threatened. The white race is being erased out of map. But they converge in one basic contemptible philosophy, and that is committing racial violence.
Yep. I was surprised, actually, when I heard them being referred to as white nationalists
they
as opposed
white
to
supremacists.
White supremacists. But
they
yes.
They should be called an ace an ace.
Yep. Okay, Nolasco, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we are running out of time on this. Let's go back to our panelists. Martin, what would you like to leave us with?
Well, actually, one of your calls made an interesting point, and that is that many of the scenes that we saw in Charlottesville that took place in Canada, many of these people have been arrested because it would be branded as hate speech, a lot of it.
Yeah.
And this demonstration never would have happened, or they've been arrested. And that's probably, and the same goes for in Europe. In Europe, actually, they would get stiffer jail sentences for that, which brings to the whole issue, how much is free speech free, and how much is it also a matter of responsibility? And I think that the United States goes too far on that, and I think the Canadian or the European option model is much more reliable.
Well, I have to say that this whole incident is yet another reason I'm certainly glad I live here and not there. Martin, thank you, and let's go to Michael. What would you like to leave us with?
You know, it is such a depressing time, and the president needs to be stronger, as Republicans in Congress are calling on him to on this. But really, at the end of the day, there's so much focus in society on the differences between people, and that's the fault of politicians on both sides who are trying to exploit that for political gain. So hopefully they can focus on America and not what divides people.
Okay. Thank you very much to you both.